I'm not who you think I am. My name's not Carrie Tate.
What is it?
Laurie Strode. My brother killed my sister when she was 17. They locked him up for a long time. But he got out. He killed a lot of my friends. It happened on Halloween.
Michael Myers. What happened to the sister? She died, right?
No, she faked her death. And now she's the headmistress of a very posh, secluded private school in Northern California.
Ash is good. I'm gonna need it when I go to Yosemite.
You're not going.
Yes, I am. Dad would let me go.
Well, Dad is an abusive, chain-smoking methadone addict.
Who would attract someone like that?
Ouch. Do you think it's possible that something so tragic can happen to somebody that they never recover from it? Can I get another glass of Chardonnay, please? Today.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. What the fuck do you think you're doing?
Oh, I'm really uncomfortable with you saying that.
Well, then don't put me in the position, John.
Ah, fuck me. Shit.
What?
That's enough. I can't take it, Mom. He's dead. Michael Myers is dead.
What are you two up to tonight?
Well, we thought we'd hit the town, pick up some guys, you know, drop some roofies in their drinks, have a whole date rape evening.
Huh.
Care to join us?
I can't. I'm having my nipples pierced.
Ronnie, the phone's rocked.
I know. And there's a strange car parked down at the gate, but I can't seem to find any signs of trespassing.
Fuck.
Oh, Miss Tate, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make you jump. It's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
I've had my share. Get in there, barricade the door. Lock it. Do as I say now. Go!
What do we do?
Try to live.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And indeed it does. Welcome back to this special Halloween edition of The Hysteria Continues, episode 109. And as you probably guessed, every Halloween we revisit Haddonfield, or wherever the action is. In this case, it's Northern California, with Halloween water, or H2O, as it's better known. What?
That was a really funny joke, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. I would have played the your little thing, but I can't find it. Sorry. Anyway, so we are back. Jamie Lee is back to the Halloween franchise. And so, yes, we are covering this kind of post-Scream Halloween edition. So I think it'll be an interesting one. And, of course, only got a year to wait before we get to Busta Rhymes. But in this case, we've got LL Cool J.
And then we're stopping at that stage.
Well, yes. Well, we're probably, yeah. Well, we'll see.
I think we should stop at this stage.
Well, I'm quite looking forward to rewatching Halloween Resurrection.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, what you doing, motherfucker?
I just have to fast forward the first, like, 15 minutes or so, and then I'm good with the rest of the movie.
Oh, do you have Alice-type issues with the start of Halloween Resurrection?
I think it's worse than my Alice issues, actually.
Oh. Okay. Right, well, we shall be coming on to that a little bit later, but how are you doing, Eric?
I'm very good, thank you.
You're very good. Okay, and Joseph, how about you on this nice morning?
I don't know, it's still dark, it's still freezing outside, and I'm half asleep, so I can't tell you anything.
Okay, well, we'll soon warm you up, won't we, Eric?
Yeah. Ooh, baby.
Yeah.
And Nathan, how about you?
I'm okay.
Okay. Right. Well, let's talk about a little bit what we've been watching. We're actually, one of our time travel shows, we're actually recording this a week before Halloween. So it's only been a week since we last recorded two shows. So anyway, you don't really need to know all that crap. But have you been watching anything of interest in the last week, Eric?
Well, of interest is stretching it a bit, but I did watch Pulse 2 Afterlife, and this is the 2008 direct-to-DVD sequel to the American remake of Pulse from 2006, and I was one of the very, very few people, who thought that original remake was kind of half-decent. So, you know, I thought it retained some of the somber, creepy atmosphere of the Japanese original, which was, I think it was called Cairo, was it? Or Cairo. Something
yes,
like
that's right. Yeah.
You know, although it was nowhere near as abstract as the Japanese original, I thought it maintained the atmosphere at least. The sequel got awful reviews, as you'd expect for something straight to video. And that was a sequel to a film that didn't get good reviews in the first place. But I like the original, so I thought I'd give this one a go. I saw it online streaming, so I had a look. It's about a father and daughter who are on the run from a ghostly version of their deceased mother stroke wife. And that's all it is plot-wise, really. There's not a lot going on. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but Jesus, I certainly wouldn't recommend it to anyone, because it's all that's wrong with direct-to-DVD movies, in my opinion. It's just bland. It's just so incredibly bland. There's the occasional spooky moment to it, but they're all ripped directly from the original. So, yeah, one to steer clear from, I think.
Okay. I think I probably saw the remake at some point back in the day. I remember I vaguely remember the Japanese original being quite good. But, yeah, certainly I haven't seen the sequel. It makes you wonder why, apart from money, obviously, why people actually make sequels to these films with such kind of so bland and so kind of uninspired.
I don't know. Another sequel I caught this week, and I know you've seen it, Justin. I'm not sure about the other guys, but it was Insidious Chapter 3. Mm. I didn't catch this one at the cinema, and I know you were saying it was kind of a letdown. Mm. I wasn't mad on the second one, so I wasn't expecting much from this. And I thought it was an improvement on part two. I still don't think it was anything. There was anything sort of terrifically original going on in it, but it delivered to a degree. It's a one-time watch, I would think. I'm not 100% sure why it needed to be a prequel to the other films. Mm. It could easily have played as a sequel. It's just a different case. You know, they've dropped the family from the first two movies and moved on to somebody else. So, and here it's a girl who's in a traffic accident and she loses half her soul to the man who can't breathe. He lives in the further, and he wants to claim the other half. So that's the basis of the story. And they go off and try and employ what's her face, the actress Lin Shaye. She's back again as the sort of psychic medium.
I think that's why they did it as a prequel, wasn't it? So they could have her in it. I think that's the only reason, I would have thought.
Oh, does she get killed at the end of two?
Did you not watch two?
I did watch two, but I can't remember much about it other than I thought it was a bit shit.
Yeah.
And there was a girl in it who was dressed like Scott. It looked a bit like you.
Mm. Spoilers for Insidious 2. Yes, she does die right at the end of part two.
Okay, well, I'd forgotten that part. There, that's why it was a prequel then. Okay, sorry. I know I was entertained, but I mean, like all the Insidious, Conjuring, Sinister type movies, I found it to be a one-time watch only. I'm not mad on this sort of what they have termed as cattle prod cinema. I think they're good, but I don't find them rewatchable in any way. So I wouldn't go back and watch Insidious Chapter 3, although I would say it is a very sort of watchable movie.
Mm. Okay, right. Well, I wasn't. I saw it at the cinema, and I thought it was a bit ho-hum. But have you got you guys? Have you seen it yet?
No, I want to, but I haven't yet. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Joseph?
No, I can barely get through Insidious 2, so I haven't had the interest.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, thank you, Eric. Was anything else?
Nope, that was it.
Okay.
I watched Halloween Water as well, and we'll be discussing that later.
Right. Okay. Well, that all sounds good. So thank you. How about you, Joseph? Have you seen anything of note?
Yeah, I watched The Purge, Anarchy. Mm. Which took me a while to see it. I mean, I liked the first film, and so I thought, you know, them kind of broadening the scope out into this wide open city and showing what actually goes on during the purge was a fantastic idea. So I don't really know why it took me so long to watch it, but you ever just see a movie you love so much that you just can't stop thinking about it? Well, The Purge Anarchy is kind of like that for me. I watched it yesterday, and I don't know, I just really love this film. It's just, it's such a, you know, tightly wound suspense machine. I mean, it basically meanders in this kind of standard chase plot, but they take so many unusual turns, and there's moments where you just don't know what's going to happen, and it really digs in. You know, it's really well done. The lead, played by Frank Grillo, I think he's just, you know, an excellent hero, totally likable, such a, you know, just a badass, just, I don't know, all around this was just a, you know, a huge improvement over the first one, which I liked the first one, but this one was just miles better. Maybe hyperbole for some people, but this is probably the best movie I've seen this year. And even though it came out last year, I just loved it that much. I can't wait to watch it again.
Okay, well, high praise indeed. I mean, I kind of watched it and I thought it was okay. I don't think I was quite as blown away by it as you. How about Eric and Nathan? I think we
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I don't think I was as blown away as Joseph was.
Mm. Oh, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Especially my favorite scene is the scene. I don't know if you guys remember it, but when they're all in the friend's apartment, and it's just like, you know, it's like it's supposed to be a safe haven, but you know something's going to go down, but you don't know what or when. Mm. And I thought that they did that, handle that really well.
Mm. Charlie, what's going to go down, Justin, at about 11 o'clock?
Yeah, it's kind of typical of the film. It's like they throw in little moments like that where you're like, okay, I know something's up here, but I just can't figure out what. And then when they reveal what actually is going to happen, you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. I also like the it's kind of predictable, but the ticking clock kind of subplot for the hero. You know, you pretty much know why he's going out to purge, as it were. But I kind of like where they took the story anyway with that. But I don't know. It's just one of those movies that just really stuck with me for some reason. I really loved it. Definitely top 10 material for me this year.
Okay. Right. Well, okay. Well, if nobody's seen it, then you've got a recommend there from Joseph. But is there anything else?
I started to watch Tales from Halloween, but I got sidetracked. So I'll probably save that for, ironically, a non-Halloween show. That's it for this week.
Cool. Okay. Thank you, Joseph. How about you, Nathan?
Well, at Grant Grant's, we watched Halloween 1 and 2, but we've already talked about those. I mean, they're fantastic films, especially the first one. On TV, yeah,
Malcolm McDowell is really good in those, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I know you love the remake, Eric. You're a big fan of that. Actually, it was
funny.
Oh, you
watched the original Halloween 1 and 2, you mean? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
They're okay, but they're not as good as the remakes.
That's exactly what a guy told me when I was at McKay's recently. I was in the horror section, and he walked up, and I was holding the original Halloween on Blu-ray because I was just checking the special features. And he said, yeah, he's like, that one's okay. He's like, but didn't you think that, like, the remake took all the things about the original and actually made it better? And I said, oh, my God. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I need to go away now.
You don't need that kind of negativity in your life.
And Wes was standing there, too, and Wes was like, he didn't know who he was talking to, did he? I was like, no, he didn't. But now, currently, I am watching Three-Headed Shark Attack on the TV. And it's about a shark that has three heads, and it's made of CGI. And it swims around and eats people.
The cryptic title.
Yes.
Yeah. And the beginning scene is amazing because there's three people standing on the beach and the three-headed shark swims up and it eats all three people at the same time.
Well, it sounds terrifying.
Oh, yeah. I'm scared already.
So you're gonna enjoy that, the rest of that later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just background. I wanted something playing on the TV that I didn't have to pay attention to.
Cool. Okay. Is there anything else?
Oh, that was it.
Okay, right. Well, I've caught up with the final Girls. I bought the DVD. It's just been released over here this week. Cheap. It's only about £7.99. So I picked that up and I watched that yesterday afternoon after watching Halloween H2O. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I know we've discussed it quite some detail last week, I think. But I kind of echo, your thoughts that it probably would have benefited from being R-rated rather than PG-13, just purely because if you're satirizing the elements from a slasher movie, you kind of need to show them. And it didn't follow through on that deal to some degree. But also agree with people who said that it had a lot of heart, emotional resonance. Which you don't normally find in a slasher movie, and also without being overly mawkish or soppy, I thought it was really nicely done. It looked really good as well, didn't it?
Yeah,
I love the way that they had at the end. Everything was like from an 80s pop video, wasn't it? The sky was red, and you had all of that whole feeling of an 80s kind of pop video rather than maybe than a slasher movie, because it would probably be more lo-fi at that point. But yeah, I thought they got most of the kind of the details right for that time. And I like the ending. I thought it was a fun movie. So I definitely recommend from me. But
I'd classify it as a good movie. It's not mean-spirited. It actually is having fun, and I think it appreciates the films it's satirizing.
Mm-hmm. I did wonder if did you ever see the film Camp Days?
Yeah, it's a lot like Camp Days, and that's why I likened it to that and a mix of like Last Action Hero. So it's definitely not an original, you know, idea, but they do it so well here. So
I just wondered if the makers of Camp Days would have been a bit pissed off because that, you know, it was the idea that you have people from the future going, well, from the present going, ending up in the past. Also, there was, what's the other film? Was it not Scary Movie? What was the one where they go through the screen into a horror movie that was from about 3 or 4 years ago?
I don't know. That could have been anything. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, there was another with the word movie in it. I can't remember the title now. It's like the final movie or last movie or something like that. But they go into through the screen into a slasher movie as well. So like you say, it's kind of not original, but it was very well done. Looked great. Looked like it had a decent budget. Camera work was fantastic, and it was kind of it's a shame it didn't make things.
I think it had a $5 million budget, so you know it's fairly big budgeted. I think that originally they were going to release it to cinemas. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's been on the shelf for a couple of years, so I don't know. Really?
Okay, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I wouldn't be surprised, but it had a bigger budget look to it than a straight to DVD film. But that was good. Eric, you've not caught up with it yet, have you?
No, I have it. I have it on the way though.
Okay.
In the post. So I next on the next podcast, I should hopefully have seen it.
Cool.
No, okay. Wait a minute, Eric. You said you knew what it takes to make a crow blush.
Yeah. Why? Is that something to do with this film?
Yes.
Yes. Is it?
I asked you, did you enjoy it? And you said yes. I was like, all right, we get to talk about that.
I didn't know what you were talking about. Do you know what happened? I was watching an old episode of Top of the Pops, and that song came on.
But yeah, it's very prevalent in the film.
Yeah, it's part of the film. It's basically part of the plot, sort of. So I was like, all right, Eric saw the final girls. Can't wait to hear what he thinks about it.
Oh no, that's just a spooky coincidence. I was just, because I've always found that lyric to be really, really... weird.
Yeah.
What does it take to make a crow blush?
That must
just
mean there's
in his pants.
Nathan, that must mean there is a god.
It must.
There you go. There's your proof.
Right. Well, anyway, we'll look forward to hearing what you thought of the final girls next time, I guess, Eric. So the only other thing I saw was the what?
Eric wants to watch the final Cheeky Girls.
I'd love to watch the final Cheeky Girls. Cheeky. Touch my bum.
I think we'd all like to see that, wouldn't we, Eric, of them being killed?
No, we wouldn't. You know, their birthday's on Halloween.
Is it?
Well, crazily enough, yeah. They're going to be 33 this year.
They're sort of Transylvanian skeletal twins, aren't they?
Yeah, with voices boobs. Of angels. Mm.
Well, that's your opinion, Eric, and we know how good you are with your judge of musical talents. But the other film I saw was the 1973 Spanish giallo, in inverted commas, Sexy Cat, which was kind of a completely bonkers giallo set around a TV show where they're making a TV show based on a comic which has a woman dressed up as a sexy cat who's going around killing people, and then the actors and actresses and people involved in the TV show are being killed by someone dressed as sexy cat, and it's as bonkers as it sounds. Very gory, very tongue-in-cheek, I think, very over the top. Not particularly well made, so it's not as deliciously cheesy or as entertaining as something like Eyeball. But it is worth the thing. The only thing that laid it down in a big way was they kill a snake on screen, which is always a no-no. But I didn't know they were going to do that. But it's, you know, apart from that, it's kind of a, if you can close your eyes to that bit, then it's entertaining, and it's you know, it's full of boobs and blood and gore and funky fashions and people saying "sexy cat" all over the place in bad dubbing. So lots of entertainment there.
The director went on to make a film in 1983 called Hot Panties. I'm just looking on IMDb.
Yes, he also made apparently the worst. I think apparently he made the worst cannibal movie.
Oh, Cannibal Terror. Yeah.
Yeah. So there, yeah, there's some kind of recommendation. But yes, so that's what we have been watching. I take it none of you have seen, had the pleasure of Sexy Cat, have you?
No.
No, I haven't.
I would like to watch Sexy Cat, though.
Okay. Sexy cat.
Well, exactly. Flushing toilet.
What are they fucking you with?
Let's not get into bestiality, please. Yes,
on that bombshell, shall we see?
Well, you like bears.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, let's move on, shall we? Here we go. Here is a trailer for Halloween Water.
It's 1998 in a remote California town at a secluded private school.
We could have a Halloween party, just the four of us. We could have a roaming orgy.
I love the way this man thinks.
No booze, no drugs, no kidding.
One teacher is living in fear.
I'm not who you think I am. I changed my name when I went into hiding.
Terrible. Take off your gloves.
My brother killed my sister.
How'd he do that?
With a really big kitchen knife.
That's enough. I can't take it, Mom. He's dead. It's been 20 years. What's he waiting for, huh? Don't you think he would have shown up by now?
What's going on, baby?
I don't know. This is a sick joke.
Now,
come on!
The face of good and the face of evil will meet one last time. But this time, it's going to be a fight to the finish.
Michael!
This summer, terror won't be taking a vacation. Halloween H2O.
It's Halloween. I guess everyone is entitled to one good scare.
I've had my share.
Now the headmistress of a private school, Laurie Strode is still struggling with the horrifying 20-year-old memories of the maniacal killer Michael Myers when he suddenly appears again with a vengeance. And this Halloween, Laurie's rebellious son, his girlfriend, and their friends will become Michael's newest victims unless Laurie can conquer her fears and put evil in its place once and for all. Halloween H2O ironically opened in August in the States, but we got it maybe 2 months later. Reviews were very good. So I saw this opening night in Dublin in October of 98. I loved it to such a degree that when it was over, I went back down, queued up at the box office again and went into the next show. So I saw it twice in the opening night and then saw it a further time, maybe about a week later. 17 years on, it doesn't quite have the magic, though, for me. There are a couple of things that I find kind of grating. One is Josh Hartnett, I'm afraid. I know there's probably some fans of him on this podcast, but his stupid hair and his James Dean wannabe attitude and the fact that he dares to give back chat to Jamie Lee Curtis makes him a kind of a villain in my book. He's not totally unlikable, but, I mean, this is really petty of me. His hair really annoys me. And I remember it annoying me back in 1998 as well, but it annoys me even more now. I just can't explain why. I also dislike the Kevin Williamson dialogue, I'm afraid. I don't think it's aged well. There's a line in the film where Josh Hartnett says, "Your overprotection is inhibiting my growth process." And lines like that really, really make me cringe. But my biggest bugbear with H2O, or Halloween Water, as Justin hilariously calls it, it's the complete incompetence of numerous award-winning special effects people to make a decent-looking mask for Michael Myers. I can't understand how they can make such convincing sort of severed limbs and throat slashings and stuff, and yet they can't recapture the magic of that mask from the first two movies. Like in Halloween 4, the mask in this installment is all over the place. It's constantly changing appearance. I mean, there were a lot of people involved in making different masks throughout the production, including a horrific CGI version of the mask, which is the lowest point in the series in terms of Michael's visage.
Where is that? Which bit is that? With the
it's where he
CGI?
Comes face to face with Adam Hanbird's character. You know where he drops the corkscrew down the...
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, and he turns around and he's face to face with Michael. If you know it's there, it looks horrendous. Mm-hmm. It's really awful. Like, go back and have a look. It's really hard. It's really awful. And they give him hair like Sid Vicious as well. And the iconic scene of Laurie and Michael coming face to face, you know, where she's looking through the window of her front door, is ruined because the mask is just such a pile of poo, in my opinion. And why does Kerry Tate's front door open out? Nobody's front door opens out. Door. Is that an American thing, maybe?
I don't know. Nathan and Joseph, do your front doors open in or out?
No, mine
is in.
Yeah. That sounds like a. That sounds very.
My back door opens out.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Joseph.
No, actually, I've never seen anything like that either. So I don't know. Maybe it was a prop choice. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. There are lots of things in the film I still really like, though. I think Steve Miner really understands pacing, and he sees no need to stretch things further than the 80 minutes of the film, which I think is great. And it's brilliant having Jamie Lee Curtis back, but also having Nancy Stevens back for the pre-credit sequence. She was Marion Chambers in parts 1 and 2. You know, so it was kind of a peripheral role in the first two movies, but it's great to have her back. The widescreen photography is evocative of the first two movies again, and I really love the ending of the film, even though when they pull out that the get out of jail card at the start of Halloween Resurrection, it kind of ruins it a bit. Other pluses include, you know, there's a fairly likable cast, Michelle Williams, Adam Hanbird, especially Jodie Lynn O'Keefe, who I thought was the standout sort of funny yet underutilized character that so often crop up in slasher movies. Location is great too, you know, this luxurious school with all these nooks and crannies for Michael to jump out of, and it provides a great backdrop for a slasher movie. In terms of horror, I really like the scene. I know Justin's going to edit this sentence out and use it out of context, but I really like the scene set in the men's toilets. you know, because it's just creepy. Although, if I was that mother, I mean, I have a lot of issues with that scene. One is, why is she driving that truck from 1927? Secondly, I'd rather go for a wee in the bushes than go into a public toilet that was in that condition. So there's many issues with that scene. I also like the opening sequence again with Marion Chambers, where there's a break-in in the house and it's quite eerie, and Michael is appearing sort of behind her and looking through windows and stuff like that. As for gore, I think it's quite low-key in that respect, except for maybe Jodie Lynn O'Keefe's standout moment, if you pardon the pun, where her leg gets severed. I'm not sure I'm totally on board with all these parallels they're trying to force into the film to make it, to make references to the original film. You know, with Molly looking out the window at school and seeing the shape looking back at her, when Jamie Lee Curtis tells the kids to go down the street and get help. I kind of understand they're looking for this kind of symmetry and to make things come full circle. But I don't feel it was necessary, to be honest. Overall, I think it's a really decent movie, and it's certainly the best of the sequels outside of the first three. I'm including Season of the Witch there, but if you're talking shape movies, then there's 1, 2, and then this one would be my third favourite. It's a huge improvement over The Curse of Michael Myers. And Steve Miner, as I said, does a great job behind the camera. Jamie Lee is excellent in front of it. But a lot of points deducted for the awful, awful, awful mask, and which I think is one of the worst of the series, even worse than the Mr. Burns mask from Part 5, and the really dated sounding dialogue from Kevin Williamson, which I don't think has aged well at all. But you could do far worse, and also a point deducted for that front door that opens out, which I think is unbelievable. And it's hard for me to suspend disbelief when the front door doesn't open properly. But who would be the person who would like this best? I would say it would probably be Nathan Johnson. Nathan.
Yes, I do really enjoy Halloween H2O, but I do agree with you, Eric, that it's got its issues. Number one, I do agree with you that Josh Hartnett's hair is totally stupid. Like,
it is so
stupid. I hate it so much. And I'm glad that I'm not the only one. It's so distracting to me. Any scene he's in, it distracts me. But anyway, I mean, I remember when this first came out, I love the idea of Laurie being back, you know, because she's such an iconic, you know, final girl. And, you know, I do love the setting. You know, I think the setting's really well. And I think you made a really good point. And, you know, I kind of have to echo it about the Kevin Williamson dialogue, because back when I watched it, you know, when it first came out in 98, It didn't bother me at all. I mean, it was in the age of Scream, and you know, Kevin Williams was really big at the time, you know, and I guess I, you know, was just used to seeing that. But I happened to watch this the day after I watched the original Halloween 1 and 2 at Grant Grant's. So I'm like, it's such a different, you know, tone. Like, the dialogue and everything is hugely, it's a huge difference. Mm. And I was like, it really, I found it a little grating at times. Just kind of like, really? I mean.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, I want to Linda with totalies in this film. I love the scene with the chase scene involving Jodie Lynn O'Keefe. I love any scene involving a dumbwaiter. I think dumbwaiters can be utilized to great, like, suspense in a horror film. I mean, they did it in Visiting Hours. There's that little short film called The Dumbwaiter, which is really good, too. And I thought they did it really well here. And one thing I'll say is, even though I may not have been the biggest fan of Kevin Williamson's dialogue scenes, they do chase scenes really well in this one, and in, you know, most of the movies he's written. I think they all have like really great like chase sequences, which I really like. I liked the face to face moment. You know, I mean, in all the trailers for the film, that's what you see. You know, when they come face to face, and I really love the opening. You know, I thought it was great, like, as you said, that they brought back, you know, the nurse from 1 and 2. I thought it was great to see her again. And, you know, she kind of has the iconic opening death scene. So I really liked that as well. And I kind of liked the ending. I thought they could have ended the series here, because I thought the final, you know, shot, the decapitation, was just like the perfect way to, okay, that's it. Unless Michael Myers can grow a head, then I think he's a goner. But no, I mean, my complaints are kind of minor overall. I mean, I would still give this like 6.5 out of 10. And I would have given it more, but I didn't like the fact that they didn't have enough like teenagers getting killed at the school.
Mm. Would you say your complaints are your complaints Steve Miner?
There you go. You turned what I said into a joke, and that was good.
Thank you.
Don't worry, Nathan. I think your complaints hold water.
Ooh. Oh, the humanity.
Okay. I was trying to think of a joke, but I don't have one, so.
Yeah, floored by that. Okay, moving on. Joseph, what do you think of Halloween Water?
Well, I really like the cinematography here. I think the wide shots are really well done. Lots of, you know, really good tracking movements. I think it's just kind of very evocative and kind of indicative of John Carpenter's work in the original. Having said that, I never really considered this to be much of a Halloween film. It's more of a Scream film to me. It definitely has a Scream tone, especially with Williamson's overwritten dialogue. I'm going to give it a recommendation, but honestly, I'm not really big on the Halloween series overall. I love the first two, but after that, I could, you know, take them or leave them. Here, the things I like that Jamie Lee is back, and I think she does a very good job here. And you know, like you said, I love the Jodie Lynn O'Keefe character. Oh, for more reasons than one, but. A lot of stuff about this film really does bug me, especially, I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy and all, but Josh Hartnett, for some reason, he really bugs me. That whole James Dean swoon act, I mean, it just makes me want to punch him in the face, and I'm not a violent person at all. I don't know, and like you said, his hair is very distracting. That little, like, point in the back, how it kind of points, it almost looks like a 14th century battering ram helmet or something turned around backwards. And I found Adam Arkin's character, or as I call him, the Skid Row George Clooney, I kind of found him perfunctory. He's basically just a sounding board so we can get the backstory from Laurie Strode without her talking to thin air. So I felt those scenes kind of just dragged down. You know, I kind of understand it for people who maybe were kind of weaned off of the Scream films and maybe had not seen the original Halloween, so they kind of needed a refresher. But you know, as someone who grew up with these films, I already knew most of the stuff, so it just kind of felt kind of useless. I just wanted them to kind of get to the meat of the film, which is basically Jamie Lee Curtis and Michael Myers' reunion. You know, having said all that, those complaints, it's a pretty good movie. More Scream than Halloween, I'd say, but it does have its good moments. You know, lots of kind of effective boo sequences, a good opening scene. Like I said, Jamie Lee is in top form here, and I'll probably get slaughtered for this, but this is probably the only film or the only horror film with the inclusion of a rapper where I actually like the character, LL Cool J's security guard character. I didn't find him, obviously he's not as overly obnoxious as, say, Busta Rhymes' character in the next film. I kind of found him likable. I actually probably found him a little more likable than most of the rest of the cast, maybe save for Jamie Lee. So, there's that. I do like the final showdown with Michael Myers and Jamie Lee, obviously, of course. As far as the mask... I don't know, maybe I'm just not looking hard enough, but I never really noticed discrepancies between the masks. For me, for some reason, I always see that same, that same Shatner-esque appearance. And, maybe the differences are there and I just don't care, but I don't know, that never really bugged me. I'd say, if anything, it's always the hair on the mask that changes that I do notice, which is kind of, inconsistent. But as far as the facial features of the mask, I never really, notice it. So I'm not going to, fault it for that. I'm not, like I said, again, I'm not much of a Halloween purist aside from the first two films. But overall, this film is, I'd say it's a definite, improvement over, say, Halloween 6, Halloween 5, and especially Halloween 4, which I find to be vastly overrated. Marginal thumbs up. I don't think I'd want to go out and watch it again. As a matter of fact, now that we've covered it, I really have no desire to ever watch it again, honestly. But, for a kind of continuation of the first two films, you could do a lot worse. So, yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, you made a valid point about it feeling more Scream-like than Halloween-like, which is very true.
Yeah.
From the time that came out and people involved in that.
Like you said, before Justin jumps in there, it is... because it's trying to emulate that whole Scream tone, it's kind of dated itself, horrendously now. So, yeah.
Justin, do you want another Chardonnay?
I haven't had any Chardonnay today.
Today?
I was thinking about having a glass of Chardonnay for the show. But
there were a few jibes about Kerry Tate being a cipher for Justin Kurzweil with her drinking.
Completely unfounded, as obvious. Although I do have a bottle of vodka here that I've been chucking from. I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I've always quite enjoyed it, but I remember seeing it at the cinema when it came out in 1998, and there being, in a similar way, being a real sense of anticipation like there was when I saw Alien 3, that when that was at the cinema, when the credits started, people started cheering when the credits, it's that kind of excitement. And the same thing with Halloween H2O, and especially I remember the section near the end where Jamie Lee breaks the glass, takes the axe and starts walking back up to confront Michael Myers. There was and the Halloween music kind of kicks off finally. People were cheering in the cinema, and that so that made it quite a fun experience at the time. I do think it has aged. I mean, it is a film that's almost 20 years old, but in some ways the dialogue in Halloween, the original, kind of dates it. And so I don't think how this film would have been made, or because originally we're going to the background, but originally I think it was meant to be a straight to video film, and it was only really because of Jamie Lee Curtis' involvement and getting Kevin Williamson on board that it actually made it to screens at all, and was incredibly successful at the cinema. It made a lot of money. So I don't have necessarily a problem. And I think it does date it, but then it dates it to that time. And I think it is a, you know, horror films have always done that. They've always kind of assimilated what's successful around it at the time. And most films do that, I kind of guess, as well. I think it's like, you know, the good things about it are it's very well directed. I think it's nicely directed. I think it looks great. Jamie Lee, I think, although I'm a fan of Jamie Lee Curtis, I think she's very good in this in most parts. Some bits are a bit like when she wakes up screaming. The person I was watching this, we've both burst out laughing because it just looks really like she's embarrassed just when she wakes up in bed screaming after having that nightmare.
Yes, yeah, I'd agree, yeah.
The other things that kind of made me laugh was the with her throwing knives at Michael Myers, she was like possibly the worst knife thrower in the world. You know, she picks up, throws about six knives at him and none of them hit the target, which he's not that far away. So that would make me laugh a little bit. The other thing that made I thought was funny was the LL Cool J's comes back at the end and he says, oh, don't worry, it was just a graze, and he's got a little bandage on his head. But when last time we see him, he's in a pool of blood on the floor. So he'd obviously clearly lost a lot of blood. But I wonder, do you know if he was killed in the script and he was brought back at AKA, well, ALA or whatever, to Dewey in Scream?
Because
He should have been dead, shouldn't he? Because he was shot.
Oh, totally, yeah. I'm surprised that, what's his name, that Adam Arkin's character didn't come back as well.
I know. I didn't mind, Joss Hartnett's hair is pretty bad in this, but then I think we've all probably had some bad haircuts, Toya, in our past. So you can't hold that against him, and I think he was playing the character.
People with Ned's Atomic Dustbin haircuts in the past shouldn't be criticising Toya Wilcox.
You said how glorious my hair was, Eric, I seem to remember. Anyway, he was playing a character, and I think he played it, you know, pretty well for what it was, like kind of bratty teenage boy. I think the mask for me again is distracting, and I think if they'd done it with the original mask, which you see now on eBay everywhere, you know, you can buy a Michael Myers mask that looks identical to the original mask in every way, shape and form. It's just an amazing that they fucked that up all the way through the series after part two. So I don't really understand why that was. I mean, in some ways it's understandable because I kind of guess it's the mask would have been burnt off, wouldn't it, in the part two?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing that I didn't quite understand. Well, if the obviously everything was ignored apart from part two onwards, like 4 to 6. Although apparently originally they were meant to be in there, and when we get into background, I think there are some scenes that we've never been seen that does link them all together. But doesn't she say that Michael Myers' body was never found? So we're supposed to presume that his body was never found at Haddonfield Memorial Hospital after the inferno, aren't we? That he kind of got away. So anyway, just being pedantic, but his mask would have burnt off, so he would have had to get a different one. But it is distracting if he's supposed to be the shape. And you'd have to wonder where he'd been for the last 20 years as well. But anyway, we could spend hours wondering about that. I really like the opening scene with the nurse, and also obviously, if you watch it, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's one of the kid who gets the ice hockey skate in the face, and obviously he's gone on to do well. He was in was it Far Rock from the Sun or Third Rock from the Sun?
But he's one at the time he was yeah.
But he went to do all sorts of big Hollywood budget films, and he still is. So he's a pretty big star. So actually, it's funny, you know, you've got Josh Hartnett, you've got him. Michelle Williams, of course, went on to be in a lot of things as well. So I get the impression, I like the idea with Jamie Lee Curtis is kind of like got this post-traumatic stress disorder. But she seems, I think she, it's understandable, but she seems very different from Laurie Strode from the first film, doesn't she? She seems like a completely different character. I can have that'd be understandable with that amount of baggage. But yeah, overall, like, I enjoyed it. You know, I think it's certainly not the worst Halloween film. In fact, arguably I would say I'd rather watch this than part five, which I know I'm probably alone on in that.
I like both. I'd certainly rather watch this than 4 or 6.
Yeah, I'd rather watch this than 4 or 6.
Well, okay. Well, also to mention Janet Leigh was obviously, that was a nice touch. Yeah. I can see, I think there was a lot of in-jokes for people, but I think the fact is they probably realised that their audience was going to be a mixture of people who were, well, not unfamiliar with the films, but certainly weren't necessarily fans of all the Halloween films, but were coming to see this because of the Scream associations, who may not really know, that, you know, people who may not been that familiar with Halloween films would have probably come and seen this, which is why it's such a big success. But the in-jokes, I think, got a little bit grating. But some of them I liked. I really liked the one where Jamie Lee opens a door and it's a closet and she goes, "Oh fuck," or whatever.
Yeah, that was clever.
You know, things like that. That was you know, pretty well done. But yeah, Steve Miner, I think he's got a good eye. I mean, obviously he directed the first, well, the two Friday sequels, so he knows what makes a slasher movie work. But I do also agree with Nathan that in some ways you had a whole school full of teenagers and they all go away for the weekend apart from four. It's kind of, it's, you know, They could have had a few more being bumped off, I think.
Well, there's lots of things in the plot that make me, like, world's worst witness protection program, for starters. You know, Marion Chambers has a file marked Laurie Strode in big red, big letters in her filing cabinet. Laurie Strode's happy to tell everyone, or Kerry Tate is happy to tell everyone she wants that she used to be Laurie Strode. You know, she's not doing herself any favors. So I've lost my train of thought now. I was going to say I've mailed you a pic on Facebook of the CGI mask from this, which you can have a look at, and you can tell me that it is awful. It's not just me who thinks it's awful. What happened was, well, we'll get into the background later, but they had two basic masks, one from Stan Winston, one from K&B. Neither were particularly satisfactory, so I don't know why they decided to for one
God,
scene.
It is. Sorry, I just saw it. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's just laughable.
Like, it looks like a Simpsons like version of Michael Myers' mask, doesn't it?
It looks like what?
It looks like a Simpsons version.
It does. In keeping with the Monty Burns theme from Part 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they couldn't have just done an insert shot at that point.
I know.
They could have, you know, it wouldn't have, well, anyway, they've. It's done. I think I did notice that when I was watching the film, that I just thought it was a lot of shadow on the mask. But, considering they spent a lot of money on this film, or relative to certainly the first film and probably a lot of the sequels, then it is curious, isn't it? Because I think the budget, well, I mean, if we're getting into background now, I think the budget was sort of in, was it 17 million or something? I'm not sure.
Yes, 17 million, yeah.
Yeah, so did you want to do some background now?
Yeah. Anyone have some background they want to share with us?
I have a couple bits.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Originally, they were going to get John Carpenter to come back to direct, and his insistence on directing was that his fee was $10 million because he felt that he was denied a lot of profit from the original Halloween, so you know, he thought that was only fair, but that fell through, and I guess he walked away because of it, and that's why they got, you know, a different director. Let's see, what else? The original working title was Halloween, The Revenge of Laurie Strode, which is a curious title. That's pretty much all I have. I mean, it's a Halloween film, so, you know.
Can I just ask, what do we think the film would have been any better if John Carpenter had directed it? Because this was in John Carpenter's leaner years, where he was making films like Vampires and Ghosts of Mars.
It's kind of hard to say. I mean, if this were, you know, 1984 or 85, yeah. 1998, I'm not sure. Steve Miner, you know, directed Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3. And then there's that, you know, that fairly wide gap, you know, between those and this, and you know, from watching the direction in this film, it looked like he hadn't lost a step. Whereas a Carpenter, it was noticeably just kind of just phoning it in at this stage in his career, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, in my opinion as well, I think. Yeah. Although, Pete, there are a lot of fans of Ghosts of Mars out there, surprisingly. It's not an awful movie. I just think it's not exactly The Fog or Halloween or, you know. The Thing. Nathan Nathan, do you have any background for us?
No, and I'm very sad about it. because I actually looked up background this week during one of my lunch breaks at work. I actually spent my lunch break looking up as much background as I could for this one so I could surprise you all, and I left it on my desk at work.
Oh, dear. Well, maybe...
I was wasted Justin, lunch.
Yeah, Justin can cheer you up, maybe, with some background.
Well, I've got a few bits and pieces. I mean, the Joseph was right. There was a few working titles for the film. So the copyright, the film says, unsurprisingly, it was also known as Halloween 7, a.k.a. Halloween 7 in Roman numerals. The other a.k.a. was Halloween, The Face of Fear, which the trailer hints at, because it does say they come, the face of good and the face of evil come face to face again. So what it was actually shot under, I'm not entirely sure. There's an awful lot. I mean, my understanding is that, I mean, Kevin Williamson, although he's got a lot of credit for this, and people talk about that, but he doesn't actually have a writing credit on the film. He has an executive producer's credit, and that's because he didn't write the script. I think he may have done he may have come in and sort of rewrote some of the dialogue, which...
Yeah, that's what I had read. He punched up a lot of the dialogue, but the actual framework of the script was not his.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis was the motivating factor behind this being made at all. And I think I mentioned earlier that my understanding was Halloween 7 was originally going to be a straight-to-DVD or video release. And she says there's on the... I actually didn't have this on DVD, so I only bought it for £3.99 because it was as cheap as it was to buy the DVD as it was to stream it. And on the DVD, there's a little making of the film, and it's got a kind of interviews with people from that time, from 1998, and they make obviously a big fact of the whole thing. Jamie Lee Curtis is obviously a bit of a canny businesswoman as well as a you know, a film star, so she knew.
She's a great dancer as well.
He's a good dancer as well, yeah. But she knew that Kevin Williamson was a hot ticket at the moment, and people, she said in this documentary that someone had mentioned to her that the 20th anniversary of Halloween was coming up, and that's why she obviously thought, and it, you know, and it was a very big, well, not massive, but a big, you know, success at the box office, which is why it kind of spawned the Even Dafter, the next film. My understanding
apparently is, I'm sorry, apparently it's the highest grossing Halloween film behind Rob Zombie's first Halloween film.
Yes, I read that as well. It's dispiriting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's dispiriting. But I mentioned earlier about the way that originally the film was meant to link all the films together. And there's at the beginning, there's some you know, there's that nice collage of everything on the wall as it's panning around the nurses and Dr. Loomis's old house, and apparently there was kind of some hints of including the kind of the bloody scissors that it was referring to some of the other sequels, and apparently a scene was shot with an extra character, kind of apparently a bitchy character who stands up and talks about the Michael Myers murders and recounts the kind of timeline. But for some reason, whatever reason that was, they decided to take that out. I kind of guess it would have been quite difficult to explain away why Jamie Lee Curtis would have taken Josh Hartnett with her, but not Jamie Lloyd. Mm. I'm kind of guessing. So I think it must have been too convoluted. So they decided.
One thing I always wondered is, I think what would be a neat idea would be to, you know, create a Halloween film to where they not only reference all the stuff Michael was pretty much up to, you know, between the original Halloween and to where we are now, but somehow figure out a way to kind of work into the framework how maybe it was kind of linked to some mask company, which would, you know, kind of talk about, you know, Halloween 3 a little bit. I think they should kind of shoehorn Season of the Witch in there, kind of intertwine those. I always wanted someone to do that, and they never have.
That would be one hell of a convoluted script.
Yeah, really it would, convoluted. But I think it would be kind of entertaining in its own right.
Yes.
Do we know, just an aside, where the if Halloween, then the new Halloween film is anywhere near sort of being made, or
it's like in? I think they're just kind of, you know, throwing around a lot of hooey right now. I don't think there's any script or anything. Last I heard, I could be wrong, but I think it was Patrick Melton, one of those like Saw sequel writers, was hired to do it. So, you know, my hopes are just kind of like, you know, at a neutral level. Not that I'm a huge Halloween series fan anyway, but I mean, it can't be any worse than, you know, the last two films we got.
Is Rob Poopy is not doing it, is he?
No.
He's the last I heard originally that it was going to be the French directors, wasn't it? The ones behind
Inside.
Inside, that's right. Sorry, Inside.
I think that would have, you know, really given it a boost in the arm, I'd say.
Yeah.
I was going to say that the director's behind Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, and I was like, well, that would make an interesting Halloween sequel.
That would. But that would have been, yeah, it'd been interesting. But then I heard that we're going to just do a simple reboot, but wanting to take
another one.
But take it back to the feel of the original rather than the Rob Zombie trailer trash Halloween series. So, I mean, I think, to be honest, we're just going to get Eternal reboots, aren't we? I think they're going to be rebooting.
I mean, if you're going to reboot the film, maybe go with one of these kind of lower key directors. I'd say someone like the guy who directed, you know, It Follows would, you know, do a good Halloween film, or maybe even the guy who directed the Maniac remake. I could see a lot of, you know, Halloween tendencies in both films, especially It Follows. So, I mean, reboot it with someone who has an eye for that thing, and just anyone but Rob Zombie. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, I think I do have some more bits and pieces, Eric, but I imagine a lot of it's similar to what you've got.
I'm curious about something that was brought up, and I'm curious about your guys' opinion. If you were to have made this Halloween, would you have also ignored the, you know, like the 4, 5, and 6, or do you think you would have tried to tie them in?
I probably would have ignored them as well. I think they'd painted themselves into a pretty tight corner by the end of 6. And it was obvious that plot thread wasn't working about the cults and the Man in Black and all that type of nonsense.
Well, I guess it really just depends. I mean, it depends on what kind of tone you're going for. If you're going for, you know, semi-serious, yeah, ignore them. But if someone came to me and said, hey, I just want you to throw some spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks, but tie everything together, I think still you could have a lot of fun with that.
I thought I would have just explained it, because I know you said you couldn't. How do you explain her taking her son and leaving her daughter? Mm. I would have just had her have like a throwaway line, like, oh, there was this one girl, Jamie, everybody thought she was my kid, but she wasn't. And then there you go.
Very good. Or she could wake up and Jamie would be in the shower or something. I don't know.
That's a terrible idea. I think they should get Kevin Williamson to come in and punch up your idea.
You do not like my idea of everybody thought she's my kid, but she wasn't.
I do.
Oh, that's not my kid.
Yeah. Like, she's telling Will her Halloween story, and she could have just been, you know, after she explained her parts in 1 and 2, she could say, oh, yeah, and then there was a little girl, you know, I found her on my doorstep, and then I gave her to somebody else because I couldn't take care of her, so she wasn't my actual daughter.
And then when she confronts Michael at the end, she's like, you killed all those people. They weren't even my kids. Michael's like, my bad.
I just see Michael throw his hands up like
oh, well.
Stalking that girl the whole time, and she wasn't even my niece.
I don't think there's any way that Jamie Lee, well, the character Laurie Strode, could come out of that good, because if that was the case, then she gave her to, pretended she was dead, gave her to her family to raise, and then essentially created a decoy that would stalk her rather than Jamie Curtis.
The way you're explaining this,
she sounds like pure evil now.
Well, exactly.
Man, maybe my idea wouldn't have worked.
I tell you what, the family reunion for the whole Michael Myers clan must be very awkward.
Yeah.
There's not many of them left, is there? I wouldn't have thought now.
So what have you been up to the last 20 years?
So I don't know. But Eric, what have you got anything?
Okay, well, as you said, it was originally intended as direct-to-video, and it was originally going to be set in an all-girls school, which would have meant no Josh Hartnett and his stupid hair, probably. And there was going to be a detective trying to track down Michael Myers, I suppose a substitute for Donald Pleasance. And one of the original draft titles, I'm not sure if you mentioned this one, Justin, was called Two Faces of Evil. And Jamie Lee Curtis, after she couldn't get John Carpenter and Deborah Hill on board, she suggested Steve Miner because she had worked with him on a film called Forever Young, which was a lovey-dovey sci-fi time travel-y type thing with Mel Gibson. It grossed $55 million, opened, as I said, in August of 1998, which was quite unusual. I think most Halloween films come out at Halloween, don't they, in the States? There was supposed to be another Jamie Lee Curtis movie coming out that month called Virus, and it was moved to January of 1999. Now, Jamie Lee Curtis is really vocal, and she was from day one, about how awful she thought Virus was. I didn't think it was that bad.
Oh, I love Virus. I mean, it is bad. It's bad, but God, it's so
entertaining. She hated it, and she tried to get the director fired off it. She hated it so much, and she was actually shooting it when she was in discussions with Steve Miner and Kevin Williamson about H2O. So it was actually filmed before it, but released after it. She says she describes Virus as not just her worst film ever, but the worst film ever.
She went back and seen the dailies for Christmas with the Cranks?
I think I read that bit in Fangoria's 1998 coverage, so I don't think Christmas and the Cranks had been done by that stage. Tom Kane is the guy who does the voiceover of Dr. Loomis over the opening credits. Now, you might be asking, why did they not just use archive footage of Donald Pleasance's voice? Are you going to ask me that?
Yes, why?
Well, I think I know the answer. It's because of rights issues, isn't it?
No, it was because when they went back for the original elements from Halloween, it was already mixed with the score and that and sound effects in the background, so they couldn't isolate the vocal track. I'm sure they could now with modern technology, but
You mean that they didn't keep like his original recordings, like recordings? That's strange.
That's what they say on the, like, I got the Scream Factory Blu-ray, and that's what they say in the documentary, yeah.
That's just bizarre.
So that's why you have this sort of very noticeably not Donald Pleasance speaking over the opening credits.
Actually, so sorry, I didn't really know that until now. I mean, I always thought it was Donald Pleasance. It sounded like him to me, but maybe I don't know.
Yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis wanted Mike Myers, the Canadian comedian of Wayne's World, Justin's World, Justin World, Graveyards, excellent. Woo, 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 woo. No?
Oh, Eric.
No. She wanted him to appear in H2O in a cameo. The idea was to have Laurie Strode walking down that street in the town, and Michael Myers walks past her, and she gives a double take. But Mike Myers wanted nothing to do with it. And Jamie Lee Curtis sounds really annoyed. She's on the commentary track with Steve Miner on the film, and she sounds really annoyed that he wouldn't cooperate. And also, they wanted to have, you know, Adam Arkin walks into the girl's bedroom, and they're watching Scream 2. Mm. That was originally meant to be So I Married an Axe Murderer, the Mike Myers film from 1993, but he wouldn't allow them to use it. I don't know what his issue was. Yeah.
Well, I hear he's a grade A, you know, bastard. He's like an unlikable, just.
Oh, but I like Wayne's World. Oh, that's disappointing. Josh Hartnett was 19 years old when this was made, and I know that we all sort of might have issues with his hair and his attitude in the film and that, but I have to say, on the documentary on the Scream Factory Blu-ray, he comes across as really nice, and he's one of the, I mean, there's no sign of Michelle Williams there, or who else is missing in action that became a big star, should we say? So a few other people. LL Cool J is not.
Gordon Joseph Levitt.
Joseph Gordon Levitt isn't on it either. But he
does.
You know,
does he have a better haircut on the documentary?
He has longish hair. He has kind of Kurt Cobain hair in it, which is kind of trendy and cool. And he comes across as very likable, and he has lots of nice things to say about working on Halloween H2O. So I kind of warmed to him then.
Is he? Is it like a recent documentary?
Yeah. It was done in 2014.
Okay.
So. He had auditioned for The Faculty, and on the basis of that audition, he had been recommended for the role of John in Halloween H2O. And again, it was his idea to keep roughing up his hair. He'd go around with a beanie hat on all the time, and then when they shouted out action, he'd take the hat off and his hair would be all messed up. Because his thinking was that he thought teens in slasher movies were too pristine looking, and he wanted to be a bit scruffier. Adam Hanbird, who plays Charlie, he was originally supposed to be a killer in the script. He was supposed to be a copycat Michael Myers. I think it was supposed to have two killers, Michael Myers and this copycat who was played by who was the character of Charlie. That was scrapped early on in the sort of scripting stage. Chris Durand, who plays Michael Myers, not a very good Michael Myers in my opinion. He's also the killer on screen in the scene in Scream 2, which is playing in the girl's bedroom. As I said, there was a couple of different masks. K&B, the award-winning K&B, produced the really, really white one, which they refer to as the Casper mask in the documentary, featureless in white. 3 weeks into shooting, they got a call from the studio saying they needed to change the mask. So Stan Winston designed a new one for them. So it flip-flops between the two. during the film. And actually, if you, I haven't checked this myself, but apparently in the trailer, in the scene where Laurie and Michael are face to face, it's the KNB mask, whereas in the film, it's the Stan Winston mask in the scene because it was reshot. And then it was a third mask used in the opening scene where Michael kills the nurse. That's the mask from Halloween 6, which was designed by John Carl Beekler. Did you know that Jamie Lee Curtis and Steve Miner knew that they actually hadn't killed Michael Myers at the end? It was written into the contract before they started shooting that the opening sequence of Halloween Resurrection was already devised at that stage. So they, Jamie Lee Curtis said that she wanted the audience to leave H2O thinking Michael was dead, but she knew herself that there was going to be a sequel further down the line, undoing all the good work of the final 5 minutes. Which I didn't realize. I just thought they'd come up with some stupid, ridiculous idea after Halloween H2O, but they'd actually come up with that idea before it.
That makes it even worse.
I know. I know.
Like, I thought they rushed and just thought of something to slap together, like you said, but no, they planned it. I mean,
yeah. It's well, even worse. Jamie Lee Curtis, it was her idea to kill Michael once and for all in H2O, but Mustafa Akkad said, no, contractually, we're not allowed to do that because we need to keep things open. We need to keep the Halloween series going forever and ever and ever. This was in the days before reboots and that and remakes and stuff. There was an alternate ending where there was a fight in the swimming pool and Michael was supposed to be killed with a javelin, kind of Fatal Games-ish. Another one had a school bus teetering on the edge of a cliff, and Jamie Lee Curtis manages to escape, but the shape falls to his, you know, presumed death. And in the existing ending, there was supposed to be a scene where the shape whispers Laurie's name, which would have been, it would have brought a tear to my eye. It would have been I would have been totes emosh. And John Ottman, who did the score, it was at the very last minute, it was, not fully rejected, but they only used half of it in the end. The Weinsteins didn't like it, saying it was kind of like the score for a big epic period movie like Wuthering Heights rather than a Halloween score. So they used some of Marco Beltrami's score from Scream, and they also got him to write some new cues. So it's kind of a mishmash of different composers in there. And that's all I have on H2O. Do you have any more, Justin?
No, I mean, that's pretty much, apart from, I did read that PJ Souls was offered a role in the film.
Yes.
And as the secretary that went to Janet Leigh in the end, and PJ Souls kind of didn't get back to them in time, so they cast Janet Leigh instead. So it would have been possibly a bit weird. I think she probably thought it was a bit weird for her character would have been dead to come back and playing a different character who looked exactly like Laurie Strode's dead friend. It would have been.
Or maybe Linda didn't die.
Oh, no, don't put on this road again.
You could make an argument that there's like no deaths in slasher movies, so nobody actually dies in any of them.
Yeah. I do think that paramedic died, though. Poor guy.
Yes. Well, that's just talking, I mean, about that ending, because obviously if they had all this in mind, that this is all the way through, the whole idea of this paramedic would have been got supernatural powers, and then...
and he doesn't once indicate, hang on a second, I'm not Michael Myers, can you help me?
Yeah. Like, he does pull at his mask, but I think Michael Myers must have had a bit of super glue in his pocket.
You know, as bad as Halloween Resurrection is, you know, I still find it enjoyably bad on that level, but yeah. Just the excuse they use to bring Michael back, it really is aside from Rob Zombie, it really is kind of the nadir of the series.
Oh, it's I mean, I would agree completely with that. It's like, I was just gobsmacked when I heard what the
like, come on. Yeah. But I kind of like how they just kind of glance over it and just get into the film. So I guess
I would have preferred, you know, just to see him sewing his decapitated head back on at the beginning of Resurrection and just going on about it.
See, what I think would have worked. Not to, you know, keep talking about Resurrection, because I'm sure we'll get to that next year. But what I thought would have been an interesting idea would be to kind of play on the nature of reality TV. Maybe there's a Michael Myers copycat who found out about this TV show and wanted to get famous, so he used the Michael Myers instead of actually bringing Michael Myers back. But, you know, that's just me.
I wonder
that would have made people angry, just like people get all mad at Friday the 13th Part 5 for not having the real Jason.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that it doesn't bother me, because, you know, whereas like Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers are just guys in masks with no, you know, vocal personalities, you can pretty much put, you know, anyone behind a mask and still call it Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees. It's not like, say, Freddy Krueger, who has an actual personality. So it really wouldn't have bothered me.
Me either.
I think the idea of him sewing his head back on is really good, though.
You like my idea?
I do. I love it.
I think they should have done that instead of the paramedic thing. I would not have even rolled my eyes as much.
But no, the paramedic thing is just it is the waking up and Patrick Duffy's in the shower of horror movies. Yeah. It's that stupid.
I mean, it's incredibly stupid.
Yeah, it's very Scooby-Doo-esque, isn't it, really?
Which kind of
I like the idea of him just saying, wait, I'm not Michael Myers. You know,
but why
so
doesn't
good.
He? At any stage. He never don't indicates.
Don't they say he crushed his vocal cords or something?
And yeah, but he still can gesticulate.
Yeah. To Makaton.
What?
A sign language.
Oh, right.
Yes. Well, anyway, I mean, I enjoy Halloween H2O, and I think it's...
So do I. So do I.
Fun, yeah, me too.
Movie. Yeah, I agree.
So, although we're making a bit of fun of it, it's good-natured. And we're looking forward to next year's when we can bust some rhymes with
Busta Rhymes. Motherfucker, I can't wait for next Halloween, motherfucker. You motherfucking fried chicken, motherfucker. Do you motherfuckers want me to read some of these Facebook posts right now, motherfuckers?
Yes, we do.
It's such a shame that they remix that dialogue, isn't it? Because they, you know, for the video or the DVD release, they redid the dialogue to make him a bit clearer. But in the short theatrical version, it was really, really muffled.
I think we've talked a lot about Halloween Resurrection for our H2O episode. I hope we'll have enough to say next year.
Well, I hope on the Resurrection episode we don't start talking about Rob Zombie's film.
Well, who knows? But let's not tempt fate. So anything else to say on Halloween H2O, or should we move on to some feedback?
Well, we got the Facebook stuff, so I'm going to read some
of
those.
let's do that next.
Okay, Rob Doyle says, do you have to watch the previous films to follow H2O? I stopped after Halloween 3. Can it be viewed as long as you've seen 1 and 2? And I replied and said 1 and 2 are sufficient enough, so thank you, Rob. Let's see. Mike Alishan, who might be one of our biggest fans, he writes in and says, this horror Halloween Fest film brought back our most beloved Scream Queen, Jamie Lee Curtis, to the spotlight on a much bigger and proper way than the Scream Queen series did. This is the best entry in the series following Part 2. Steve Miner did Michael and Laurie proud. The things I love most about this movie would be the intro with the nurse from Part 1, the school setting, Janet Leigh, the first time Laurie sees Michael, and the tone of the movie, which has a dark and brooding Jamie balanced by a clumsy and comical LL Cool J. Do me a favor this Halloween, ladies and gents. Dim the lights, crank up the sound, and watch H2O either by yourself, peeking up from under your bedsheets, or with a bunch of friends and some rum, yelling back at the screen. At this time of year where leaves fall and witches rise, you can do no better than H2O. Thank you, Mike. Let's see. Mike's brother, R.I. Alishan, says, I was still running on a post-Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer high when Halloween H2O was released and really enjoyed it at the time. It probably helped that I was in high school and fell squarely in the film's target demographic. As far as 90s slasher sequel goes, H2O is certainly better than Jason Goes to Hell, but it's no new nightmare. There are still elements I enjoy and the opening sequence remains strong. But overall, it's just another forgettable entry in the franchise that doesn't hold a candle to the first three Halloweens. You see, in my demented mind, both Michael Myers and Dr. Loomis went out in a blaze of glory at the end of Halloween 2, and the great Halloween franchise ended after John Carpenter stepped away following Season of the Witch. What? If Nathan can pretend Alice is still alive, I can pretend that there are only three Halloweens.
Hey!
That was from R.I. Alishan.
You do a lot of pretending, Nathan, in fairness.
No, it's true.
Lee Russell writes, if one wants to accept an alternate universe where Laurie Strode made it out of Halloween 2 in one piece and somehow managed to build some sort of life for herself despite being forever on the run from her crazy boogeyman of a brother who had previously wiped out her friends and an entire hospital staff just to get to her, then this movie sort of works. However, if you think the series goes on after this one ends in the abortion Halloween Resurrection, you forever deserve to be stuck in a hell where you're beaten to death by Busta Rhymes and his kung fu stylings over and over again as he shouts, trick or treat, motherfucker. Yeah. Let's see. Bob Hartshorn says, a 9 out of 10 for me. Slick, smart, and very suspenseful, and all from the man that brought us two of my least favorite entries in the Friday the 13th series. And not to mention the truly woeful House.
I like wow. House.
I do too.
I like love Soul House.
Man. I love Soul Man as well.
Shame Halloween Resurrection has cheapened its impact somewhat. Fingers crossed for the next installment, though. Let's see. Brennan Klein writes, one of the best sequels, 90s/trash perfection. I had a major crush on Josh Hartnett when I first watched this. Mikey Faulkner says, I don't think this one has aged well. Although Drunk Laurie is a hoot, channeling a certain wine drinking host, and I've always wanted to drop my pumpkin goo onto Josh Hartnett's face.
Ew.
Okay, now we're getting into the dregs here. There's a lot of pacing issues. Also, they should have included the infamous scripted scene that tied H2O to parts 4 through 6, which is something I think we touched on. Final thought. It's somewhere in the lower middle of my ranking of the franchise. It's totally miles away from its predecessors, but it's a fun popcorn flick for the last third. At least it was better than Resurrection, which is the cinematic equivalent of pulling out your urinary tract from your body for 90 minutes. Alrighty. Brad Yasuda writes in and says, I actually really enjoyed this one. In a rare series of events, I saw it 3 times at the movies. I paid full price the first time and saw it as part of a double feature the other times. I was waiting for the final confrontation between the siblings for so long. I didn't hate anyone in the film and was actually surprised to see that the token minority character lived. LL Cool J was funny. The last shot was my favorite thing about the movie, apart from the score over the opening credits. The only things that disappointed me were the late 90s songs and the fact that the true final confrontation had to take place in Halloween Resurrection. And let's see. Andrew Beryl says, I wish we could have gotten another couple for the students to add to the suspense and body count. I hate the mask they reshot it with. They should have never used the score from Scream. I also wish Jodie Lynn O'Keefe's character of Sarah replaced Michelle Williams' character of Molly. Molly was just such a boring replica of the boring final girls. That being said, it has some good moments. I like the school and I love the fight with Jamie Lee Curtis. John Jordan says, I saw this in the theater when it was released and thought it was amazing. How different we think when we're 15. This movie has seriously not aged well, and it's kind of a chore to sit through now. It's hard to believe that this was directed by the same person that did Friday the 13th Part 2. Okay, let's see. Estelle Phillips writes, fun at the time, and I still enjoy it now, particularly the action-packed last 15 minutes. I can understand people saying it hasn't aged well, as it is very much a product of its time, post-Scream, with a hint of Dawson's Creek. I think I would agree with that. Jason Blanco says, Scream 2.5, but a top 10 portrait of post-traumatic stress syndrome on celluloid. Retro Oscar for Jamie Lee. Kyle Signoretti writes, I know it gets crapped on a lot, but I've always enjoyed H2O. And finally, Michael Tomlinson says, has some genuinely tense moments, but strange how it has dated more than the first film. Still was good in the cinema, though. And that's our Facebook tuppence for the week.
Okay, right. Well, thank you for everyone who wrote in.
That little feature is getting to be very popular.
Yeah, well, I think it's good, isn't it? Because we get lots of short, snappy kind of comments on the film. So,
including somebody dissing Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3. I can't believe that.
That is curious. House.
And House. Yeah.
Right, and Eric.
And Eric, yes.
What? Shall we? No, they called Justin Gosling.
Said Eric is a whiny Inga.
I'm not a whiny Inga.
Well.
You were last one.
You were last one, yeah.
Yeah, that was your finest Inga moment ever.
Yeah. Well, let's play How to Get in Contact with the Show, and then after this we'll come back with a little bit more feedback.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
I think it would have been funny for this episode if I would have changed the music to, like, say, the disco theme from Friday the 13th, Part 3.
Well, that's why I put Adrian King at the beginning. So, well, here's some more feedback. Who would like to go first?
I'll go.
Okay.
This is from Dick Brown. He says, "Hello, I'm Dick Brown, longtime listener, first-time emailer, for a few questions for you all. Number one, has Justin ever actually seen The Simpsons? Whenever it's quoted, he seems to do the same kind of awkward, polite laugh that I do whenever real men, in inverted commas, are discussing football. So, Justin, have you ever seen The Simpsons?"
Yes. Is that what Edward and Mrs. Simpson?
Justin.
Oh, sorry. I have seen The Simpsons. I haven't seen them for years, though. I used to watch them quite a lot, but I'm not. I enjoy The Simpsons, but I haven't really watched them regularly since... for probably about 15 years. So yes, I do hold my hands up. I'm not those kind of in jokes.
I'm the same. I watched the first 10 seasons and I stopped after that. But the problem is I've seen the first 10 seasons like a million times. So it's like stuck in my head.
Mine's the same with Joseph.
Yeah. Okay. Number two, have any of you seen Horror Hospital? The one with your man from the Confessions films in? It's one of my all-time favorite movies, and whilst not technically a slasher, it's about as close to a carry-on style one as you're ever likely to get. So, have any of us ever seen Horror Hospital? I have. I liked it.
Yes, so did I.
So did
Robin I. Robin Asquith in it. I haven't seen it.
It's very silly, but it's quite good fun.
Eric.
I like the car with the blade that comes out and chops people's heads off and a little basket to catch their heads. It's kind of like a Robin Asquith sex comedy, but with horror.
Is it done as a comedy though?
Well, kind of. It's not really. I haven't seen it for a long time, but it's done in that kind of slightly cheeky early 70s British way, with slightly knowing kind of, but rather than full out comedy. It's just very over the top. It's like teenagers being kept in hospital and being experimented on. Robin Asquith tries to escape. So I think it's kind of that mixture of kind of slightly, I think it's knowing, put it that way.
Okay, he says, number three, there are a couple of slasher video games coming out soon. A Friday the 13th themed game called Campfire sounds very promising. What would you want from a slasher game? Let's see. I'm not much into video games myself, so I really can't answer that. So how about you guys?
Neither am I, but I know Justin is, and when he's finished playing his video games, he likes to put his baseball cap on backwards and go off on his skateboard.
Yes, that is true. Down to the shop to buy a bottle of vodka. I finished playing Until Dawn, and that was good fun. So, I think that Friday the 13th game now has been renamed Friday the 13th, the game, isn't it? I think it's if that's the one. We're thinking of, and I saw the trailer for it the other day.
There's a crowdfunding thing for it, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah, they have a Kickstarter campaign, and they raised, in the first 4 hours of its launch, they raised over $100,000. So,
wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, so I mean, I think it's the difficulty with being, because obviously there has been, I didn't play the SNES Friday the 13th game back in the day, but I think there is a limitation to a slasher movie game. That's why I think Until Dawn did it really well, because it was done like one of those kind of playable old, those games we used to take choices. It's almost, so it's like the film, but the graphics are so good now, the PlayStation 4, it's pretty seamless.
A lot of people really, really hate the Friday the 13th game on the original Nintendo Entertainment System. I actually kind of like it. I like the music in it. That do 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 do.
There was one.
It's the only one. I love the old games, the old 8-bit platformers, and I always liked that game, even though it's like impossible. Like it's one of those games I've never beaten because it's just so impossible.
there was a Friday the 13th game for like the Commodore 64 and Spectrum and that back in about 1984, and it had the final chapter as the cover image. Mm. Remember that one, Justin?
Yeah, I remember seeing it. I never played it.
It was supposed to be awful, but I never played it myself. But they got into trouble for the cover art, which they didn't think was suitable for kids who were the sort of computer game generation at the time.
Right.
I'm not really big into games either, but I would play a Friday the 13th game. And I hope I don't sound morbid for this, but what I want out of it is to be able to play Jason.
Yes.
Well, yeah, the new game. The new game has that option. Yeah,
I want to be able to kill the campers.
Yeah, yeah, so you get that option in there. Although they're talking about, sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I want the campers to be able to be naked as well.
Well, the one thing about this new Friday the 13th game coming out is they're basically what they're doing. They're hyping up, you know, your ability to play as Jason, and they're saying now Jason's back in video game form for the first time since you know, the Nintendo version or whatever, but that's technically not true. You can play as Jason Voorhees in the newest Mortal Kombat game. He's one of the add-on characters, so they're a little incorrect in that, but yeah, there you go.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, but in a Mortal Kombat game?
Yeah, it's basically...
So it's just basically one-on-one fighting. It's not like going and slashing teenagers. No.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Basically, you know, it's got the Mortal Kombat characters, but it's got a lot of add-in characters like, you know, Jason Voorhees, the Joker, I think maybe even Superman. I'm not certain. I gave up on the Mortal Kombat series after the first two. But it looked... From some of the stuff I've seen with Jason Voorhees inserted, it looks fairly interesting and very, 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 very violent. So, yeah, there you go.
Cool. Okay. Is that the end of the email?
No, his last question is, number four, are you as disappointed by the show Scream Queens as me? I have not watched Scream Queens, actually. I'm having a hard time mustering up the enthusiasm because I hate the Ryan Murphy style. It just does nothing for me, but maybe the other guys can answer that better.
It's certainly no masterpiece.
No.
I think it's all right is the best I can say about it.
It's kind of entertaining, but it's kind of pretty vapid.
I think it's wonderful.
Do you?
Well, of course you do.
Yeah. I love that show. Like, when it comes on, it's an unspoken rule between me and Wes, no talking. Because we have to watch it. And we don't want to miss anything.
It's entertaining, and I like the latest episodes, the one I've seen last, where they had the Chanel number one or whatever decided she wanted a pumpkin patch with the a complete recreation of the maze from The Shining.
Yeah.
And then I'm sorry.
They also put in a nod to The Exorcist 3's most scary moment as well. So there's the genuine horror enthusiasm behind the show, and also Silence of the Lambs, but... It works as a comedy, but it fails as a horror sort of series.
And they have Culture Club in there as well.
Yes.
What I thought about doing is basically waiting until the season is over, and then when it's like on, like I'll probably go on Hulu and just kind of watch it in one fell swoop, or I'll at least try to. But I don't know. I'm after the Scream series, I'm having a hard time mustering up the enthusiasm, and especially considering I don't really like Ryan Murphy's other works, like The American Horror Story. I don't care for that show at all either.
Gasp.
I like the first season. The first season was actually, you know, fairly well done, but after that I just kind of really lost interest.
Mainly my problem with The American Horror Stories is I do love all of them. I think they're all awesome and they're entertaining, but Ryan Murphy seems to have a horrible grasp on how to end like a series. Like, it's like the last episode feels so haphazardly slapped together to tie everything up. You know, he just doesn't end each season very well, but the episodes leading up to it are usually really great for me.
My problem is basically he seems to be more at home trying to be snarky and campy than he does actually writing something horrific. I don't think he's a very good, I don't think he handles the actual horror elements in his stuff very well. All the other stuff, like the bitchiness and the cattiness, I guess he does a good job of that. But you know, there's no real good balance. You know, I don't want to watch bitchy and cattiness by itself. You know, I'd rather watch it with something.
And don't watch Scream Queens.
Yeah, I don't know if I will. I'll probably try, but you know, right now I'm just not that interested in it.
Scream Queens is 90% bitchy cattiness, 10% slasher.
Yeah, I like bitchy cattiness, but I think, you know, it needs a balance, and I think he's not very good at that balance.
See, but here's the thing. Like, I thought American Horror Story Asylum and Freak Show toned down on that whole bitchy catty thing. Now, Coven, yeah, it was full of, like, bitchy characters. But Asylum and especially Freak Show, I thought he really kind of toned down that, you know, that angle.
Okay. Well, Dick Brown basically goes on to say, thanks so much for the podcast. We'll write to you again soon. Love, Dick Brown.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dick. Who would like to go next?
I have one here. Okay. It's from Michael Tomlinson in the London, UK. He says, dear all, thank you very much for answering my questions during the Aerobicide episode. I have another one. Well, perhaps more of a request. Would you be able to give me some suggestions for what you believe are great found footage movies? There seems to be a lot, and I've got through several recently, such as Willow Creek, The Conspiracy, Area 51, etc. And, of course, already know the biggies like Cloverfield Wreck and Blair Witch. But I wondered if you all had some that you had seen that really stuck with you. I'm keen to get through as many as I can, but realize there are some serious dross out there. A found footage top three would be great, although I empathize that the top three segment may be a thing of the past. Oh, and one final thing. A few months to go, but what are your favorite horror films of 2015 so far? For me, it's undoubtedly It Follows, which the more I see it, the more I think is something of a masterpiece. Love to you all, Michael Tomlinson. Okay, so Michael, I think the first person we need to go to about found footage movies is our resident found footage expert, which is Joseph.
Well, I wouldn't call myself an expert, and to be honest, I think I've kind of grown out of that fad a little, but the good stuff I've seen, I would definitely recommend Creep, which is, I think we talked about not too long ago. That's a very good film.
I was thinking Mungo Lake as well, which is one I know that Justin likes as well. It's Australian, is it?
It is. I was going to say that.
That is an excellent film. That's probably the best found footage film there is. It's more of a kind of a faux documentary more than it is a found footage film, though.
Yeah. But I think the most effective moment in it is a found footage moment of some footage from a mobile phone camera,
Yes. I would also recommend, aside from a little bit of cagey acting here and there, I would definitely recommend the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which is very, very disturbing. And one of those films, after I saw it, I had a hard time shutting off the lights. It's really effective. Maybe one more I would recommend would be, what's it called? Actually, I can't really remember.
What's it about?
They're all the same. It's the one we watched with, Grant. It's got the same title as, a different one. It's,
Asian at the Borderline. Oh,
Evidence. It's not the, there's two different films called Evidence. This one's the one where basically these campers go up to like the woods or something, and then they see that creature out in the woods, and then it just basically kind of, not to spoil it, but it really just kind of spirals into this huge spectacle. That's all I'll say. I really enjoyed that one. It's probably, you know, in hindsight, it's probably really silly going back watching it now, but it's one of those movies that it got so far out there and outlandish. I was like, wow, this is just crazy. So I would recommend that one.
Eric.
Well, you just mentioned it there, the Borderlands.
Yes, that one. It's AKA Final Prayer. I recommend seeking that one out because there are scenes in that, I mean, I wanted to like hide my eyes because there are a lot of really unbearably suspenseful moments in that movie.
You know, I don't think I've seen Borderlands yet.
You should watch it. It's really tense and creepy.
Got probably one of the best endings I've seen in a horror film in recent years.
Yeah. I'll check that out. That'll be my recently seen next episode.
It's been released in the States as Final Prayer, as Nathan's saying there. So,
well, I mean, I've heard of it. You know, I know the Borderlands title, but I just never got around to watching it. So,
I showed it to Grant. And you know how we always make fun of him, Joseph, because he puts his fingers up to his eyes and looks through his fingers?
Yeah.
He was doing that almost like 75% of this movie, he was doing that.
Hmm. I'll check that out.
Cool. Okay. Was anything...
Well, he said one of our favorite films of 2015 so far. Now, I'm not great with new releases. Was Under the Skin wasn't this year, was it? Was that last year?
I think that was last year.
Yeah. Trying to think of ones from this year. Well, It Follows is one he mentions, and that's, yeah, I've seen that, and I do agree it's great.
Technically, some movies I can, you know, that were technically released in 2014 that I didn't see until this year, I technically consider them 2015 releases. You know, having said that, I would definitely recommend It Follows, The Guest, The Babadook, especially, you know, The Final Girls.
I would not recommend The Babadook.
I would. And that's all that counts. The Final Girls, I'd definitely recommend. The Purge Anarchy, I'd definitely recommend. There's a few more I've seen, but, you know, it's still early, so I'm having a hard time remembering right now.
Cool. Well, I'd echo all of those, apart from I share Eric's kind of ambivalence towards The Babadook. But
I'm on Joseph's side on this one.
Thank you.
I'm like, I love The Babadook.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just that movie's so polarizing. It's like, you know, either you like it or you don't. And I don't know. For some reason, it just really stuck with me.
Fair enough. Okay. Is that everything from Michael?
Yeah, sorry, it is. Yeah, no, I was just trying to think of other 2015. Like, I saw Unfriended recently, which I quite liked. I don't know if I consider it the best movie I've seen this year, but I did like it.
Yay, Eric. You're on my side. I love Unfriended.
My God.
I've not seen it.
Have you seen it?
Yes. I'm going to unfriend all of you now.
Well, I haven't seen it. Can't unfriend me.
Well, look, Justin sounds so desperate. It's like, oh, don't unfriend me.
He had a little bit of an Inga in him there.
He did.
Justin, have you ever had an Inga in you?
Thankfully, no. But let's move on, shall we? I've got a short one here, and then I've got a very long one coming up. So, hello, guys. I know you've probably seen the same kind of message countless times, but I absolutely adore the podcast. I live in a small New Zealand town, and it's difficult, if not impossible, to find people who are interested in obscure 80s and 70s horror films. But after finding this podcast, I feel that that void has pretty much been filled. It's just awesome hearing how passionate you guys all are, and I feel involved, even if I'm not technically. I've been trying to watch an episode or two a day, or listening, I guess it means, preceded by the film in discussion. It's become a Halloween routine of sorts. I've been making tons of independent slasher movies with friends for the past year, and it's great to see all the support you guys have for the indie scene as well. Excellent work, you guys, and all the best, Marty Thomas Taylor. So, thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty Taylor, yes. Thomas, or Thomas Taylor.
Yeah, and you have to send us a link to, if you've got, you know, for us to have a look at your work, because I'm sure we'd like to do that. So thank you, and yeah, it's always good to hear people. We seem to have a little fan base in New Zealand, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes. So, has anyone got any others?
No, I just want to say before you read the last one, that guy's talking about, you know, you're talking about how we have a quote unquote fan base. For those who are, you know, in our quote unquote fan base, 88 Films just released the Nailgun Massacre Blu-ray with our commentary. So definitely check that out.
Absolutely, yes, and hopefully it's not going to be the last one we do, but we have got some others on the horizon, but we just need to, we need to see if we can make those work. So
can't talk about those at the moment.
No, but also, straps.
Yeah.
But we've also got, we can talk about the Vinegar Syndrome one, can't we, that's upcoming? Or can we? I don't see.
Which one was that? Frightmare?
Frightmare, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that it's in pre-order. I think you can pre-order it now. I haven't gotten a copy, a review, our standard freebie copy yet. But I think you can pre-order that. It may
best
been
film
released,
ever.
Sure.
Well, AKA the horror star, not the Pete Walker film. But but hopefully we make the film a bit more enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm learning.
Apparently, Straps likes the podcast.
She seems to, yes. Okay, well, let's. I'll whip my long one out here. Let's get started.
This is from
Terry in Belgium. He says, it's been a long time since I wrote, however, I'm still listening. Winky face. I am glad you reviewed Slumber Party Massacre because it all belongs to the funniest slasher movies from the 80s, along with Chopping Mall, Friday 13th Part 6, Cutting Glass. I really like this movie because of the colourful characters, the quick pace, the cheesy dialogue, the music, a good body count and so on. I watched Blood and Lace a week ago and it was so-so. Like you said, I can't recall who said it, none of the characters are likeable, even the final girl. The effects are average, and like Eric said, this makes this film makes you think it's a made-for-TV movie. The directing is poor, and I think it's the only film the director made. You mentioned Bay of Blood, one of my favourite Mario Bava films, by the way, because, slight spoiler alert, there was more than one killer involved. That is the only comparison you can possibly make with the excellent Giallo slasher from Mr. Bava, of course. I understand you want to please your donators, but come on, Alien, Terminator, Sightseers. I suggested you, Justin, to review The Fog, the original, of course, from Big John 2 years ago, and you told me it's not slasher-esque enough. Sorry, but I do not understand you guys.
Oh, sorry, just a quick aside.
Justin's
someone did,
in trouble.
Someone did pledge for The Fog, so we actually will be covering it at some point.
We will, yes. I think it's originally we were going to be quite purist about the things we chose.
I think we've kind of veered off that a little bit now.
I think when Joseph started, the whole thing careered off a cliff pretty quickly, didn't it?
Hey,
when's our Troll 2 podcast coming out?
Yeah.
Hey, I would be down for that.
So, okay, and he says, I saw Creep 2, the found footage film. You seem to like it, but I do not share your opinions this time. I was really bored. Nothing really happened. The way the cameraman reacts is not believable at all. I mean, the guy you hired in was obviously completely nuts. Even if the cameraman needed money, sorry, he was supposed to run away from this crazy guy. The budget of this film was obviously really low, only two characters and a voice on a phone, only two places, and you can see it. There's one scene I like, though, when the crazy guy asks the cameraman to switch off his camera recorder and tells in the wolf story. The ending was really predictable. The spoiler alert, the cameraman deserved to die because he was stupid not to watch his back. So, I don't think we agree with you, Terry, on that one, but obviously respect your opinion. Are you still? What? Are we still? Okay, we're still with us. Okay, it goes on and says, you talked about Wes Craven, RIP, Mr. Craven. But I did not think you mentioned Christopher Lee's death. He died a month ago and he deserved to be mentioned also. I think we did mention Christopher Lee, didn't we, at some point?
Yeah.
He was also a great actor, like Craven was a great director. Both had a successful and long career. May they rest in peace. He goes on to say, there's just a few more bits here. It says, which are the DVDs, Blu-rays you made in audio commentary, guys? Are these DVDs, Blu-rays, B-Zone, I think Savage Water, no, and the other ones? I think there's a mixture, isn't there? I think most of Vinegar Syndrome ones are Region Zero, aren't they?
I think everything we've done has been Blu-ray except for the Savage Water Death by Invitation, which was discontinued.
Yeah, but
I think everything else has been Blu-ray, hasn't it?
Yeah, the Vinegar Syndrome stuff, it's all Region Zero, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, which means if it's Region Zero, you'd be able to play it on any Blu-ray player.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 88 films stuff is probably region 2 or region A or B or whatever, whichever's the...
I'm not sure. Were you guys able to play them in the States?
I haven't played it yet, so I'm not sure.
All right.
Well, I've actually got... Let me just look. I've got it in front of me here so I can tell you what it says. Where does it say? It doesn't actually say what region it is.
It's probably Region Zero because I think that's kind of becoming the standard now for kind of worldwide releases now.
I think sometimes they can't do that, though, can they? Because some of the Arrow releases, they can release them in the States, but they can't. It depends who holds the rights. And I think sometimes they can get in trouble if they do it, that thing. But yeah, no, it doesn't actually say on the thing. But I think if you do a bit of Google, you'll probably be able to find. Oh, no, it says Region 3. Region 3, so
which is Region Zero, yeah.
Yeah, so you can play the Sir Nelgar Massacre. If you buy it, then you'll be able to play it on any Blu-ray player anywhere on the planet. So let's finish
this off. Not to toot our own horn, but I think the Nelgar Massacre commentary is one of our better ones, I'd say.
It's really entertaining to listen
to. I think the reason why I like it so much is because, I'm not disparaging background information or anything, but I think this is more of a kind of a relaxed kind of commentary. So I think it works on that level.
Cool. Okay. Sounds good. Another question, guys. When you're watching a movie, are you shrooming on weed or just drunk?
So, I'm usually sober.
Yeah, I'm sober like 99.9% of my life anyway. So,
so am I. So, Justin, I know for Justin Nathan it's quite different, but
I mean, I know Justin's a raging alcoholic. But
well, I watched H2O and The Final Girls completely sober, and I'm sober. I have alcohol-free days of the week, and I don't drink that much. I have a glass of wine in the evening.
You have a beer with lunch is hardly drinking, isn't
it? Well, exactly.
It?
Yeah. As Dottie Hinkle would say.
One thing I will say about drinking is we talked about this before. I think we're going to try this at one point. We're going to do hopefully, we're going to do an episode where all four of us are completely hammered. I think that would be very fun.
I think it would work if you're getting up at 6 in the morning, though. But
no, I would definitely take the day off for that one.
Yeah, we'll have to. We will come up with that. Maybe for an anniversary show. Maybe the next anniversary show. But he says, I do not know the game you were a gamer just until Dawn looks pretty cool. According to you, I have a PS3, which I only use to watch DVD or Blu-ray, even though I have a few games, and obviously talked about earlier. And then he says, closes it by, I would like to add that Eric's Terminator rap was awesome. AWESOME. I did not know he had this kind of talent.
I know, I'm a man of many talents.
Exactly.
Top of the chart. That's coming out as a single. It'll be available on iTunes as part of my new album, MC Sexy.
So you're going to be on Top of the Pops?
Yep.
Speaking of Eric's raw talent, as it were, do you have a joke of the week for us?
Mm. I do have a joke of the week for you. But wait till Terry's finished his email, maybe.
Well, then that's everything from Terry in Belgium. Yeah. So thank you, Terry, for sending another long one. And as a little reward, you can listen to Eric's joke of the week.
It's my joke of the week. It's so fantastic.
Did you hear that Jamie Lee Curtis's mother was a bit high maintenance on the set of H2O? Apparently, Steve Miner had to treat her very gently. Gently.
Oh, dear.
Eric.
Oh, Eric.
That was particular. That needs another.
Two trumpets.
Eric, I totally thought you were going to make a water joke.
No. Eric's joke does not hold water.
Hey, how come he gets a laugh?
Because that was better than your joke.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
I don't think you understood. Did you understand the joke?
Yes, sounds like Janet Leigh.
Yeah, because I thought maybe it was too sophisticated for you.
Eric, you got to stop with the homonyms.
That was.
I think Justin's Halloween water.
Yeah,
that's stupid.
I think Eric,
you laughed at it.
Your joke is the opposite of sophisticated.
I laughed at it condescendingly. What?
Your joke is the opposite, Justin, of sophisticated, isn't it?
It was. Oh. You got a quiet, Eric. Go ahead, quiet.
Shut up.
He's getting quiet. Eric's getting quieter and quieter as he he moves away. As his lips pout, as he gets his pouty lips, he's moving further away from the microphone as his lips gets bigger.
Shut up.
Right. Well, that was quite an epic show, actually, wasn't it? Considering we were going to be trying to streamline the shows a little bit, we're kind of knocking 2 hours. So I hope you enjoyed our return to Halloweenville, and I hope you all have a great, spooky and safe Halloween. And we are going to return with what is our next pick.
We'll be back just in time for the next Friday the 13th. So we'll be covering Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan.
The darkest side of the night.
So that's going to be interesting, isn't it? So. Yes, so we'd join us aboard the cruise ship, and we'll be sailing into bloody waters with that next Friday instalment. But thanks for joining us, and say goodbye to the good people, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
I'm going for a swim in water.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I haven't put my face on. I said, I might be doing some heavy breathing.
Or it sounds like a hair dryer.
I'll be right back.
That's what they all say. I'll be right back. Oh, good, because I gotta clean the floor.
I love you. I used to set my soul on fire.
The three-headed shark lost one of its heads and it mutated and now it's got six heads.
Candy, pumpkins.
And then I said, yeah, but that's only yellow, Eric.
Yeah, we smell like burning leaves. It's vivo excitement tonight.